Hi, everyone. It's Ryan Hoover, your host of Product Hunt Radio, where I'm joined by the founders, investors, and makers that are shaping the future of tech. It's good to have two very active Product Hunt community members on the podcast today. First up, it's Heaton Shaw, someone you may recognize if you're active in the community. He was nominated and won Community Member of the Year in 2018. And while as illustrious as that is, he's also accomplished a couple more things than that. Heaton's actually co-founded a few different SaaS companies over the years, including Kissmetrics and Crazy Egg, which is still going 13 years later. Today, he's the co-founder of FYI, which builds tools to make it super easy to find documents in a few clicks. Our other guest, Marie, is Heaton's co-founder. Prior to jumping into the tech scene here in Silicon Valley, she was a director at Diageo, working in the spirit and wine industry, and before that, she worked at PricewaterhouseCoopers. On the podcast, we chat about Marie's transition from big companies into the world of startups, how Heaton and Marie build products with a distributed team, and they also share some of their favorite productivity tools. But before I jump in, I want to give a shout out to our sponsors. If you're a writer, graphics designer, painter, musician, or some other breed of creative, your job is to turn ideas into products for your customers. Unfortunately, menial tasks like invoicing and expenses can steal time away from your creative process. FreshBooks invoicing and accounting software for creative professionals is the solution. It basically has no learning curve and on average saves users up to 192 hours a year. Set up your accounts and start invoicing in just minutes, track expenses and take photos of receipts with the mobile app, track time to record every billable hour, and automation is built in to save even more time. Right now, get a free 30-day trial of FreshBooks, no credit card required. Go to freshbooks.com/producthunt and enter Product Hunt Radio in the How Did You Hear About Us section. As some of you may know, in addition to my day job at Product Hunt, I also invest in early stage startups thanks to AngelList Venture Fund Services. In 2017, I prepared a deck, raised some money from friends and people I've worked with over the years to bootstrap my first fund. I raised money and capital from LPs, and AngelList handled everything else, providing a dedicated account manager, a real-time dashboard to manage my portfolio and valuations, tools to keep my LPs up to date, and all the tax and accounting overhead. They make it super easy for me to move quickly. While still relatively new, AngelList has already hosted over 130 venture funds, which can range as small as $500,000 to tens of millions of dollars under management. And as a fund manager, your job is to simply find great entrepreneurs and choose who to invest in. Everything else is handled. If you're interested in starting a fund, learn more at angel.co/venturefunds or drop me a line at ryan@producthunt.com and I'd be happy to help. So I'm here at AngelList on President's Day with Heaton and Marie. How's it going, guys?
Doing well.
Yeah, going great.
Nice. What are you up to today? I see you came in with coffee. Are you taking President's Day off? Are you working? What's happening?
It's not coffee. We both quit coffee.
Oh.
It's an almond matcha.
We did
almond matcha.
Almond matcha.
Ah, okay. Is it good?
It's great.
Yeah?
Yeah. Want one?
No.
And we did not take it off. Heaton and I have a bad habit of just like blowing through holidays and not realizing they're holidays until we notice that all the restaurants are really crowded. Coffee shops.
Well, I showed up in the office and there's some people here, but it's mostly empty. And some people are working from home, but it's quiet. But let's talk about, like, how did you two meet first? I met Heaton a long time ago, early on in my kind of venture into Silicon Valley, back in 2011, I think I want to say. But how did you two meet? What's your kind of background? Talk about yourself.
I'm going to talk about myself, and then Marie can talk about how we met. I think she tells a story better than I do, and she can talk about herself as well. So I'm Heaton. I have started a whole bunch of different companies since 2003, and I like building stuff, and I like helping other people build stuff. So the two things I work on primarily today are FYI, which I'm sure we'll talk a little bit more about because it's the most recent thing I've built with Marie. And we work on something called Product Habits, which is currently an email newsletter where we're sharing how we build stuff. So it's all about building, I guess, for me.
My name's Marie, and my background's a little bit different than Heaton's, actually really, really different. I come from corporate America. So before tech, I actually worked at a couple of really big companies. I was at PricewaterhouseCoopers, and then I was at Diageo, and I was mostly doing M&A and strategy and some innovation, and then I kind of got sick of that world. Happened to live in San Francisco because I was running wine innovation at the time, which was fun, but I was ready for a change, and
did that involve a lot of tasting? How did you?
Actually, it did. Yeah. And not the good kind, kind where you're sitting down with a winemaker and you have 40 samples and you're like, and it's like kind of white wine that's not that amazing. Mm. And you're sitting there at 2 in the afternoon and you're like sipping it, spinning it out. It was not, that part was not pleasant.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But there were other pleasant parts. I focused on tequila at one point. That was great.
Oh, nice.
Really nice.
So you're not going to tell them about the private jet?
No.
Why not?
That's not what this podcast is about. I'm introducing myself.
Tell them about the private jets.
Oh, my God. Okay. My old world was very glamorous. There were actual private jets. Not that often. Yeah. And like a lot of, you know, nice restaurants. I mean, the alcohol industry is obviously an industry all about entertainment, celebrities. And I worked on a lot of those types of projects as well as acquiring different brands. So yeah, I had a very glamorous life, which I decided to leave. And one of my close friends actually had recommended that I speak to someone in tech. It was actually someone named David Hua, who is the founder of Meadow and the CEO, which is a YC company. And at the time, it made complete sense. Cannabis, alcohol, really natural kind of fit for just looking and seeing if I could help them out at that industry. And I happened to go to a meeting there, and who did I meet but Heaton when I went over there, and we like immediately got along. And then I started going to more meetings with Meadow and just giving them some advice. And Heaton happened to be there again. He had some desk space at the time, and I was also their advisor. And then we just kind of evolved and decided that we would do some work together. And then somehow I convinced him to build software again, which he did not want to do.
I don't think anyone knows this.
Yeah, he did not want to do it.
Really, why not?
I think it's tiring. When I started, it was much easier to build something, launch it, and get a whole lot of users. And honestly, you had to do less work than you have to do today to make something successful. I think it's easier than ever to put something out. It's harder than ever to go make it work. And so I was kind of tired. I tried it a couple times. One of my SaaS businesses is still going, and it's been around since 05. It's called Crazy Egg. And so building more was not something on my mind. But then I think Marie came along, and
I was naive at the time. I did not know how difficult it was.
See, that's the problem right there. See, you see my point? Yeah. So I just feel like if you're going to do it, it's tiring. It's just honestly tiring. I think it's tiring to build any kind of business, but like you have to be ready for what that looks like. And I don't think Marie was, but we're in it now. So
I saw the glamour. Like, you know, I was living in San Francisco. I saw so many different startups doing well, people getting funded. I mean, people were having a lot of fun. And I thought it was this like really new creative industry I could get into. And it is. However, it takes a lot of work.
Yeah. Hence why you're working on President's Day.
And absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. And the weekends. Yeah.
Some weekends.
Yeah. And the weekends.
So what year was it that you met?
2015.
It was tail end of 15.
Yeah.
Early 16.
And then what was the first? Was it, let's build this, let's go do it? Or how did you decide what to build? And,
well,
and what was that like kind of coming together like moment? Like when did you decide to work together?
Yeah. I'll have Heaton explain that. But I think the biggest thing I remember was Heaton was like, you shouldn't work for anyone at the time. And I was like, maybe he's right. And then I quit my job without having anything else to fall back on. But that's where I'll leave it.
Oh, you're going to leave it there.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. So I was renting a desk at Meadow, and Marie was doing some consulting for them and a bunch of other companies. She was just talking to a few people around sort of starting a consulting business more formally and all that. And I went to a meeting with her just to help talk to the person. Basically, after the meeting, I just had the idea of like, why don't we just do this together? Because we were already like talking to different companies, because we were both like literally, I think our desks were like, we were the only ones in that on that floor. And our desks were like across from each other, roughly speaking. And so we just decided to start doing, honestly, consulting at first. And then we explored a lot. And then after we did that, we ended up starting to build software once Marie convinced me to do it. I think for me, my perspective, and you might have a different one, but like is after building so many things in the past, I really had this idea that somebody who can complement as well as has a lot of similarities in the way of thinking about fundamentals was really important to me. So I think Marie and I really care about finding problems worth solving and then solving them and then building even the team around it. And we both, I think, like the leadership and management aspects of things, as well as the maker and making and the creation of things. And we do really, we realize that we did that well together. So for me, it's always been about people and the people I work with or the people I create things with, more importantly. And at some point, it was just like, all right, she wants to build software now, I guess. Let's build some software. I kind of know how to do
that's
that.
Sick of drinking wine.
And, oh, totally. Yeah, totally.
Flying private jets.
Yeah. Not anymore.
So
not,
boring.
Not any of that. I actually quit coffee and drinking and all sorts of other things. Gluten.
Yeah. Yeah.
All the things that make you happy. Just
So you're not happy?
No, I'm kidding. I'm very happy.
Okay, just checking.
So I mean, it was...
I'm your co-founder. I got to help out with that.
I'm happy.
She's got Stockholm syndrome now. Just kidding.
It was really neat, though, for me, because I came from an industry where I was like really dealing with physical goods. And before, when I was at PricewaterhouseCoopers, I was focused on retail and consumer. So it was all physical goods. And then I kind of saw this industry where you can create something like so quickly. I mean, our first MVP, which we'll tell you about, was 5 days. Like, that was unheard of for me, that you could do something that fast. For me, it used to be like, okay, you've got all your specifications for the bottle, and like, how's it going to go down the line, and what's the risk matrix for if it's going to fall, and if the label's going to come off, and all those things that just add up to like so much time, so much thinking before you can actually get something in a customer's hands. And so this was just like, holy shit, you can learn so quickly from your customers and change it right away. And that was like unheard of for me. And I think that was the real draw of software, was you're right there with the customer and there's so many ways to talk to them.
Mm-hmm. And you can see, for better or worse, if they're using it.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Which is part of the joy and pain of software, I think.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What was the first product that you built in 5 days?
Oh, God. That was so I'm embarrassed already.
I'll tell the story. The five-day MVP.
Yeah, cool.
So we built a product called Dugo that we thought we were going to sort of start a fund and invest in other companies. I'd already been investing before that. And then Marie and I did a little bit together. And we ended up helping a lot of people with their pitch decks. And so we were building a software around giving people pitch deck feedback. Mm. We never publicly launched it.
It was not on Product Hunt.
It wasn't on Product
Hunt. Yeah, I don't remember seeing it, actually.
Yeah, it's still live, actually. And all it was you upload a pitch deck, and then the process of getting feedback from your investors or your advisors or even your team was just pretty efficient. So we built that, and we learned a bunch of hard lessons around it. And then I had this bright idea of copy and pasting it.
It sounds like really simple, doesn't it? Copy and paste software.
Yeah, I get in trouble for this one. everyone was convinced, so we decided to copy and paste it and create a new product that essentially you upload your pitch deck, and then we didn't know what we're going to do beyond that, but it was the same technology. That's what I meant by copy and paste. So we copy and pasted the code, changed it up, and then what we realized is that we wanted a differentiator. So we had done a little bit of lightweight research around like DocSend and old school YouSendIt type stuff, where you're sending files and all these things. And what we realized is that there was no easy way to give context on these things unless you were doing like a webinar or something like that. And there's no sort of asynchronous way to give context with audio that was super easy besides recording a video. So we had this idea of copy and paste. We copy and pasted the thing. Then we decided we were going to add this unique twist to it where you could add audio to the PDFs. And we had a cool way of doing it. It wasn't a video. It was actually just going through the slides, and you would record them, and it would be audio plus video. So there's all these bandwidth advantages and all kinds of other things that we thought mattered. And that product, actually, we had launched it, and I think it hit number one on Product Hunt.
I remember DraftSend.
Yeah, DraftSend.
It did pretty well.
What it was. Yeah.
Yeah,
it did pretty
on
well.
On Product Hunt.
on Product Hunt, on launch day. There's more to the story, but that's essentially it. From there, basically, we realized that that product didn't solve a big enough problem. That was one thing that we realized, I think, too late after spending a lot of time and effort building it. And then we also realized that there was false positives. So, like, there were people that were really excited about it, people that used it. On launch day, one of the reasons it did well is we had a whole bunch of people record. And, you know, we shared their decks
showcase,
and everything.
Showcase, like, how to use it and everything.
It was really good. Smart. On launch day. It was a good strategy. But it good strategy and a set of tactics around launch doesn't mean you're going to build a real business. And it, no offense, Ryan, but it doesn't matter how many upvotes you get.
I know. I do tell some people, say, hey, you should start a fund and just invest in the most upvoted products. And I'm like, you know, it's Product Hunt's about like what's interesting and cool and innovative, not necessarily what's a good business. And actually, the evaluation of a good product is also very different than a good business as well. So, yes. Yeah, you're absolutely right.
Yeah. So, no offense, but your platform sucks. No, I'm just kidding. Kidding.
Edit that out. Brett, edit that out. Just kidding. You can keep that in.
I like it.
No, I like it too. I'm just giving him a hard time.
I know.
I might have even told you that before you launched it, but that's okay.
Yeah. Oh, God.
I think, you know, you said, you know, the first product you built and launched was, you know, somewhat embarrassing, and it's typical.
Yeah. Oh, it's like that. Okay. Yeah. All right. Typical. So you're still embarrassed by it.
A little bit. It's just like always things that could be better.
And you're fair enough.
Why doesn't it work like this? And why can't we do that? And
fair enough.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
never satisfied. It's this constant. It's the curse of a founder, I think, is an element of never being fully satisfied.
Yeah, I think that's what drives you too, right? In part.
Right.
So,
exactly.
Yeah. But, you know, I oftentimes think I'm like really hard on myself about mistakes, and I love doing postmortems. And so when I look back at those mistakes, I feel like, oh, we really messed up. But then I realized that FYI actually came out of those mistakes, the business that we're working on right now. And if we hadn't have made that mistake with Dugo and then the same mistake with DraftSend, we would not have learned about FYI, because what actually ended up happening was we were like late in the game on DraftSend and we thought, oh, we should do some customer interviews and like learn about the problem. And we have to do it in an unbiased way, so we can't lead them to voice. And in doing that, we discovered we were solving the wrong problem. And there was a completely different problem around finding your documents and doing that quickly and managing all these different tools that the team is using that we weren't solving and we had the opportunity to solve. So sometimes you make mistakes and you're just like, oh, why did I do that? That was so stupid. But the really important thing is what came out of those mistakes. What did you learn? What can you do better? And what did you actually learn to help build that product or a new one?
Mm-hmm. I think part of when you're building something new, and I'm curious to get both of your feedback on this, is there's a thing about iteration cycles is arguably the most important thing sometimes, because unlikely that you're going to launch something that's a hit on day one. And so it's important to find out quickly what is going to work and what isn't going to work, and then doing that really, really fast. Because I, you know, product hunt, there's many things that we tried over the years, and some things worked, some things didn't. If we could have just moved a little bit faster on some of those things, we would have been in, you know, we would have just executed better ultimately. How do you think about iteration cycles, and like, how do you know when this isn't working and to move on and try something different?
Yeah, so we knew that solving the problem was going to be more than just like a search interface. So one way to solve it is, you know, you combine all the apps that somebody has and then you let them search across all of them at once. And we knew there were products out there that did that. We knew that that's just not enough, but we had to learn about that first and we had to really dig into what the customer wants. And so we didn't build something gigantic first. We built something really small. So we took 5 days. This is literally, we gave ourselves 5 days to build a first working product, a prototype. It's not like it would hold, you know, 1,000 customers, but it was enough for us to learn from customers. And we built that in 5 days. And it actually looks, funny enough, like pretty close to the interface we have now, because we just kept iterating in those 5 days. As soon as we'd see what it looked like, we could just really quickly iterate. And then we ended up having 10 customers that used the product at least every day, or told us why not every day, and then talked to us every single week and gave us feedback about what they were searching, what wasn't working. And from that, we just got so much information. And it was all because we just said, we know this isn't going to work, but we need to learn why and what will.
Yeah. So the context for kind of why we did that and what we got out of it was basically what actually led us to the next set of iterations. So the 5-day MVP, in 5 days, we were able to learn why all the folks that came before us, just building a search box to help you basically find your documents across all the tools you use, why they failed. They mostly failed, in short, because a search box isn't enough. And we learned that. And at that point, we're like, okay, great. We're really happy that we did this, because we would have spent a lot of time building a whole bunch of infrastructure around search, maybe doing machine learning and doing all these things that, you know, logically, if you say people want to find their document and that's the biggest problem, the way you solve it is best way we all know how, which is like put a box that looks like Google's and throw a search, you know, like search box, let people type in keywords, et cetera. If you think about how you find documents, so that's not how you find documents. And so we quickly realized that with the 5-day MVP and didn't waste time building any of that infrastructure. Instead, what we did is we started iterating on an experience. And that experience starts with the Chrome extension, and people would install it. And then our interface would show up in a new tab. And that's where we started doing weekly iterations of that new tab experience until we found what was the early signs of good retention and what we would say is product market fit, which was a lot different than the search box. So until people had a much different sentiment than the search box, which is they remembered to come back there. Well, it's in their new tab, so they see it regularly. And what they saw, they wanted, and they clicked on. We actually didn't stop iterating until we got there. And that was probably like 12 weeks of weekly iterations that were, at the time, we had the team that was good at that. And I think this goes to just, how do you think about your team at that time? Our team was good at weekly iterations. And that, you know, was something that helped us basically get to a launch. And so we did that from about January to March of last year. And then from March to May, once we hit that sort of metrics we wanted in the sentiment, we basically were building out the infrastructure and making sure we could support enough users.
Make it more scalable and performant and everything.
Yeah. Mm. At least the first shot at doing that.
Yeah.
And then we launched on May 22nd of last year, so 2018.
Yeah, and on those weekly iterations, we didn't just have customers looking at it, and we kept inviting more and more people into our early access, but we also had people on usertesting.com looking at it.
Which is a great tool.
Yeah.
I use it for a number of different things. It's
awesome.
It's great for quick feedback.
Yeah, it's Big really fans. Good for quick feedback. You should never just look at user testing, though, because you can get false positives, which we've learned the hard way, where you can put something through, everybody loves it, and then you get it to actual customers, and it's not actually solving their problem. But the thing about the weekly iterations for those 12 weeks is we had to like keep going through even though we were so frustrated, because we kept thinking like, oh yeah, we solved it. This fix that we did this week, it's going to, you know, people are going to love it. We changed the UI, you know, we added some feature and no. And so we had to just be patient and like keep going. And even when we felt like we were going to give up, just like keep trying different things. And then finally we hit it with customers, and that's when we knew we were ready to actually launch.
Yeah. How are you thinking about, or how have you built your team then? You mentioned earlier before we started recording that you have a distributed team, I believe.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It's fully distributed.
Yeah. How have you, and is that different than what you've done at Crazy Egg and Kissmetrics and other past companies?
They've all been distributed. At Kissmetrics, being venture funded, we ended up having half the team in San Francisco, but the other half was not here. With Crazy Egg, it's been distributed since day one. So that's now like almost 14 years. So with the products that FYI and Product Habits, the kind of couple things Marie and I work on, it's a fully distributed, remote, whatever way you want to call it today, team. And I think we probably go through more of a process of like, I almost want to say at this stage, like just-in-time hiring, but I would also say just-in-time firing as well, which is kind of the other side of just-in-time hiring.
Yeah.
And that doesn't mean that we hire people and then fire them right away or anything like that. We just are able to use a lot of contractors, especially early on in the process. We tested a bunch of folks like that. A lot of folks will do part-time contracting before they leave their jobs. We're cool with that. So there's more of a testing process. And the reason I say that is like, if you're, let's say, in the Bay Area and you have five people you want to work with, you can all get in the room and you can just work with those five people and you're done, right? In the case of a distributed team, you might, I mean, obviously, in most cases, you haven't met the people. In some cases, you might not even know the people yet. Like some of the folks on our team today, I haven't known in the past. Some of them I've known for many years, and that's okay. So we needed a way to make sure that we can work with people and see if we work well together and then go from there. And that was, I think, one of our biggest early criterias around team. So, you know, just-in-time firing is not really firing. It's just like, let's try to work together. If it works out, let's continue. If not, like, let's say bye amicably and knowing that this is the way it's going to work or the structure.
Yeah, it's we've done that with teammates too at Product Hunt in the past, where it's we tried to come on like a sort of a trial basis, or it's really a way for us to test each other. It's not just a one way thing, but it's really like maybe this isn't a good fit for them. Maybe we love them, but they don't like it. And especially when we have a distributed team as well, not everyone's used to that environment. Actually,
yeah.
A lot of people are used to coming to an office and used to whiteboarding in person, and it takes a certain type of person, I think, to be able to adapt to a remote lifestyle and workplace.
Yeah,
how many people do you have now?
We're about a dozen right now.
About a dozen?
Yeah.
And are they around the world or how?
Yeah, all around the world. We have people in South America. We have someone in Spain. We have people in Portugal. We've got people in Africa. We got people.
Canada.
You're
bunch
right.
In the US.
Canada. Canada.
Yeah.
Nice. So you're all over just like us.
Yeah, just like you folks.
What tools do you use, actually? This will be an interesting topic. I want to collaborate here. I want to learn what you're using.
Yeah.
What tools do you use to, I don't know, communicate, stay on same page?
Yeah. So we use Slack. As the way for everybody to communicate, and we can do it asynchronously. So the person who's in Spain can obviously, you know, leave a message for Heaton and I. We see it in the morning, they're still around, and then we'll message them later and they get it the next morning. We also use, Trello, mostly for the product team. We use GitHub for the issues, and that's how we on product communicate with engineering. And there's a bunch more.
Talk about your favorite.
Oh my God, my favorite.
Just talk about your favorite.
I'm such a document nerd. I know, Google Docs. How am I like spacing on that?
Google Docs.
The engineers use Confluence, which I don't. Sorry, Confluence. I can't. I don't get it.
It's okay.
I'm not, I think, the target audience for Confluence. So yeah, Google Docs is absolutely my favorite. I would love to try Coda and Notion, but they don't have an API yet. So we can't hook it up to FYI. So
Airtable.
I can't try those yet. We are actually about to ship the Airtable integration.
So we better use it more.
Nice. Yeah, we do use it. We've been using it on analytics more.
So we have an interesting use case. You wanted to learn a little bit that we love for Airtable for, which might be way more in the weeds, but we actually use Airtable to map our analytics, the events we want to track and the properties, the timestamp when we start tracking them, and any notes about them. And so,
you're funneling the metrics into Airtable?
We're not doing any of that. It's literally like a dictionary or a glossary the exact tracking, because one of the biggest problems having built analytics stuff before is that nobody knows what those events mean.
Yeah.
And the analytics tools are okay at that now, but they're not that great at it. So Airtable helps us have like the source of truth of what we're tracking, and we keep it up to date. So I know it's a weird use case, and I don't know if anyone that's doing that, but like I had to mention it because Airtable is one of the best ways to do that because of the ways you can slice and dice the data.
Yeah, I've looked at, we use Periscope, for visualization of metrics and things like that. You know, if you dig into the weeds, there's some events, which I'm wondering, they're 5 years old probably in Product Hunt being reported. And I'm like, what is that from? And it's maybe like an old version of our iPhone app or something that for an event that actually was accidentally added, you know, and it's there until someone stops using the app at some point. Yeah, I've been there before. I know that pain. The no-code space has matured quite a ton since I was a kid. I actually built my first website using Dreamweaver. Nowadays, you can build advanced web apps without writing code using Bubble. Bubble launched on Product Hunt back in 2015. Now more than 250,000 makers and companies have used Bubble to build marketplaces, social networks, CRMs, and more inside their browser. Check it out at bubble.is/producthunt to get started for free. What other productivity tools or apps do you use? Are there others that you use personally or at work?
So I think we encourage this on our team, which might be the opposite of what you hear from other people, but we actually like keeping it to the basics. We, for the most part, I'm trying to think of a random tool we use. I have a random one that I use.
Yeah,
you probably do.
Yeah.
But for on the team, we try to keep it to the basics. That way people aren't having to learn new tools and things like that all the time, which might be weird. But we're also a company that integrates with a lot of tools. And we know how the mess is inside of companies when they start using lots and lots of tools. We do help solve that mess to a great extent and are working on that. But you wanted to talk about a different tool or a unique tool. I think the tool I love right now is actually Bear for notes. It's probably my favorite tool because it syncs across phone and multiple computers and it does it pretty well. And if there's a conflict, it'll tell you. And before that, I used to like Vesper. I don't know if you remember that at all.
No, I don't.
It was by John Gruber built it. And it's a notes app just on the iPhone. It's beautiful. And it works really well. I still have it, even though it's out of the app store. I hope my phone never dies. Yeah, exactly. I'm into the notes taking apps just because I take a lot of notes.
On your phone.
Personal notes.
I've never met anyone who can like do so much work on his phone.
Uh-huh.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
It's great. Yeah. I'm happy because you can work all the time.
I do. Yeah, on my phone.
24/7.
Yeah, there you go. Totally.
Yeah.
For me, it's actually... It's like a weird Chrome extension, one tab.
Yeah.
Where it like, but then I hit it by accident and closes all my tabs and I start like, you hear me all the time. I'm like, no, what just happened? And it's because I hit that by accident. But like on the rare case that I actually need it, where I need to hide all the tabs, I'm about to be on the screen share or something. It's super helpful, but I don't use it that often. It's the only thing. So
and
other than that,
you don't go back to them, the basics.
I don't go back to the old ones. Okay. Only
it's
like
kinda,
if I
like
just
pocket,
did it.
You know,
yeah, I know.
you save it and you're like, okay, I saved it. Yeah. I have it there, but you never
better.
See it, never read it again. Yeah.
Right.
It's a weird cathartic feeling because when you command quit and lose all those tabs, it's like, oh no.
I kind of like that feeling.
No.
It is somewhat cathartic.
I might be a masochist like that.
You're
I don't
like
know. I kind of like
tabs.
It. I just like when I hit command quit and they're all gone. Even if I do it by accident, I'm like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
Clean slate.
I'm scared just like
you. What are you scared of? You can get them back.
FOMO.
Yeah.
FOMO. So actually, let's go back actually to product building here. You know, something that you mentioned earlier, Heaton, around it's never been easier to build something, but it feels like it's harder and harder to actually grow and get the word out there and acquire users. How do you think about acquisition and also like at what stage in the company or product do you start to even focus on that?
That's a good question. I think, let's put it this way. I think it highly depends on the type of customer segments you're going after and whether there are natural ways for the product itself to get you more customers. And if a product can do that, Product Hunt obviously does that. There's a community, lots of sharing going on, lots of reasons to share. Like we just shared a upcoming this morning, and that's going to get you at least 5 or 6 new users you didn't have before on Product Hunt.
I hope more.
Maybe more. Well, it depends if we get outside of the Product Hunt audience and things like that, right? So some products that are just naturally like proper to kind of do that. Other products are like enterprise focused products and things like that, where like you're not necessarily going to get people to invite other people into the product, maybe in their own company, but not necessarily outside of it. And obviously consumer products live or die by the fact that people spread it. So Marie and I wouldn't work on a product where we couldn't get it to grow on its own through the usage of the product. And I think that's a big criteria. So I want to answer your question, but I think it depends on what type of product you're going after. So if you're going after a product like that, you want to make sure that you have good retention before you go try to pull the moves around inviting people, or like whatever it is your mechanic is around getting people to invite other people. If you're an enterprise product, it's kind of the same, where it's like you don't want to hit acquisition until you have enough customers, but you want to acquire enough customers so that you can understand whether you have fit or not, or whether you have high retention. And so I don't want to say that it depends, but I think in all cases, one of the mistakes I've seen made in the past, and this is something I used to say myself, so I'm kind of can call myself a dumbass for it too, which is like sort of build your audience before you build your product. The way I look at it is it's easy to get an audience, partially thanks to the business you've built with Product Hunt. Back in the day, it was Dig, you know, yeah, which I still keep remembering and will mention it as much as I can. But Dig got us tons of users early on when we launched, like for lots of things I've done before, just like Product Hunt does for so many people, just like TechCrunch did somewhere in between for a while. Now it doesn't in the same way that, let's say, Product Hunt does and Dig used to. But you can get those users, you can get them early. I mean, you folks at Product Hunt even have a feature. I was going to say, I don't want to pitch Product Hunt, but it's just natural. But like,
that's all right.
You have the ship feature and the upcoming, which is literally helping anyone build what I call an early access page and letting them get early users. And it's up to them to go message them and do all the stuff which you folks provide. But if you want to get a few users using your product, that's easy. Getting tons and tons of usage or getting high retention or all that, that takes all that product work and all that growth work, or, you know, if you're enterprise marketing, demand generation, things like that. So I think the way I would say it is nail your product and then scale it would be my new mantra these days, because it's so easy to get to that nail your product. Even enterprise customers are not unheard of, you know, it's not unheard of for them to try new products today.
Yeah. 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 What's been surprising coming from wine world and private jet world to software building over the past, I don't know, what, 3 or 4 years? Is it, and also as it relates to customer acquisition, it's like a very different thing.
Gosh, a lot of things have been surprising. So I think the first one is just how easy it is to get insights from your customers. Like I mentioned, user testing. I had never heard of anything like that before I got into tech. And actually, at the start of that, Heaton and I were afraid to do user tests. We thought that for some reason you needed like specialized knowledge and to be a designer to do it. And we would not do it. And then finally, we were like, we can't just like see this thing and not actually use it. That was a surprise, just how simple it is to get insights from your customers and how close they are. Another one is that people actually want to give you their opinion and their feedback.
Yeah.
Like from outside, I thought, oh, you have to pay people or you have to get like a focus group. I mean, just these ridiculous things that big companies had to do because no one wanted to really talk to them and give them feedback. And like people are tweeting at you. I mean, that I was just surprised at that. Yeah. I'm somewhat new to Twitter, which is a little embarrassing. But yeah, like the fact that people just want to share and also the trolls, that surprises me. But I'm not used to that. He is somehow.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, trolls are some validation. If you have a few trolls, it means like, okay, they're at least paying attention to you.
Oh, okay.
And I got that advice, you know, early on in the early Product Hunt days when we had some haters kind of attacking me and Product Hunt. And, you know, I want people to like me. I think most people do. And so it hurt. You know, I have soft skin and it's gotten thicker over the years. And I kind of realized, okay, well, if they're really hating on me, then it means like you matter, or at least they're paying attention. So I've kind of internalized that going forward.
I appreciate that.
Yeah.
You're going to remind me of that. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
The other thing, says it better than I do.
Yeah,
he has more trolls. Well.
Oh. Just kidding.
You might. I don't know. You've got.
I'm
a lot.
Giving him
love
a hard
me,
time.
Love me.
I think remote work too was another really surprising thing for me because I come from like giant offices, and yes, private jets, but like that's not, and also regular planes all the time, like 99% of the time.
Place,
yes, actually, yeah.
Yeah, she's like, oh my god.
Oh, there you go, Ryan. See.
Okay. Yeah.
First class in private jets, and you want to do this?
I know. Crazy. I love it. I know, but it was surprising that you can bring together a team and like really have that camaraderie just using these tools that let you collaborate. That was unheard of. And also, I come from the world of like, there was no Slack. There was like, you know, Outlook. Oh, wow, you can email each other. I think we had messaging. Like there was just, you know, you put stuff in your folder that was like on the company drive. There was no cloud. I think one of my companies tried Box at one point and like really swiftly moved away from it. So all these things to me, I'm like, oh, wow, Google Docs. It's like, it's kind of sad, but I think that's the state of what a lot of people are dealing with who are outside of tech. It's just a lot older industries.
So we can get stuff done faster.
Absolutely.
That's the theme I'm hearing.
Yeah. And even just the quick iteration too. I mentioned this earlier, but I had no idea you could build something in 5 days and change it in another day and then change it again in a day.
Yeah. What are your thoughts around kind of a theme of no-code tools? So tools that are used to build pretty complex apps sometimes without writing any kind of code. Are you using any of those internally? Do you think that's, you know, a future of building in the next 5-10 years?
Well, so I'm going to let Heaton probably answer in more depth, but we have not been using any just yet, and we actually want to learn all about it. We're doing the Maker Report, and we have a survey going out really soon that's actually has a bunch of questions about no-code tools, because it's something really interesting that a lot of the apps that we actually integrate with are facilitating. So we want to learn more about it, but at least on my end, I haven't been too exposed to it yet.
I always take a historical context on software. That's why she pointed it to me on that side, because like I think I'm like an encyclopedia sometimes, and like to me, like Zapier is really what comes to mind before anything else. And I think they really paved the way for software to be easier to, I don't want to say build, but I want to say automate. And so if you think about what an app or what software is, it just automates a bunch of stuff. It's a bunch of functions, and technically speaking, right, that run. And so these no code tools, or even these tools that are making it easier to build automated applications or automated software. Software is already automated, though. So I think they're empowering people with automation would be the way I describe it. And Zapier is really what started it. It empowered marketers to not have to rely on engineers for software to talk amongst each other in a way that like you wouldn't think of, because all these marketers wanted to do all these weird things. I'm saying weird, but it's not weird. They wanted their email lists into Excel, right, or spreadsheets, and they didn't want to have to export a CSV and then import it into like Sheets. So like Zapier comes along, and some of their early adopters were literally marketing people who wanted to hack together a bunch of stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I've seen this in many different companies over the years. There's a subset of marketers or community support or whatnot who are always trying to prioritize or get things prioritized for their team to help them do their job better. And it's always very difficult sometimes to figure out, well, if this feature is going to drive this amount of revenue or drive this many users, you know, is this tool that is going to support this person, save them 30 minutes a day, is it the most important thing? And it always gets deprioritized in companies. So yeah, Zapier is an excellent example where it's enabling these people not to have to rely on engineering, but to do it themselves, to automate themselves, and or at least pieces of themselves, and do so in a way that doesn't require their permission. I think it's really powerful.
Yep. And so I think like all of that you're seeing today is an evolution of that, because so many products now integrate with Zapier. So that I think, so it's like, okay, Zapier started, they you know, made it easier to connect tools without like engineering. And they did it for marketers who really were always begging for engineering resources and not getting it. And so that's good. That's great. There's also a ton of marketing tools out there. So Zapier connects all those too. So I think there's a like perfect timing and perfect like storm there. Then you have this thing that you're talking about, which is like all of a sudden these people are empowered. Like now what? Right. And then so Zapier ends up making it easy for any app to connect to Zapier and then connect to their, I don't know, 6,500 or however many apps they connect to. So what's next? Right. Next is like full on, like we can build stuff without writing any code, which is this whole sort of no code movement. So to me, I'm super bullish on it. I think it's very early and we're going to have to see what happens. And there's a couple companies that I do want to shout out to around this, which is and the first one I would say is Airtable, because they've been saying this for a while. Like they've literally been saying like, this is where we want to go. We want to make it easier for anyone to create. And even the way they did their kind of, again, this is where the historian in me comes along, but like they had this awesome version of their product where they made it so that even kids were like building apps, and they showed that in like a video, and like that was how they were doing their marketing at the time. Now they've changed and evolved a bunch. Super fascinating to me, because like they were really trying to push it almost like really hard a little bit early at that time, which is cool. And then now you have Coda coming along and kind of doing similar things. You even have to some extent some of the, I forgot what it's called, but some of the ways that Quip integrates other products into it as not necessarily no code, but you're getting to this place where like it almost feels like all these document apps frankly, and also a lot of other types of products that are taking their sort of ideas that, you know, the engineers and product people have and really pushing the limits around what we can do with these products and these tools and what we can do with documents and stuff. So it's fascinating. I think another historical point before we move on is, like, I'm amazed at how effective people have made the Google Suite, specifically Google Sheets, in this context. Because, yeah, it does require a little bit of engineering, but the amount of engineering it requires to dump data into a Google Sheet is nothing compared to dumping it into anything else.
Yeah.
Right. And so many PMs that I know just run on Sheets without any other system because their engineers found it really easy to use.
Yeah. Yeah. I actually just met with the team behind Glide. Have you seen Glide?
No.
So Glide, it's right now it's a tool to create a mobile app, essentially. Mm. Google Sheets right now is basically the database and the input. Mm. And so if you have a Google Sheet right now, you can sign up and you can actually connect to Google, select the sheet that you want to turn into an app. So let's say it's a list of customers, let's say. You can connect that together and instantly it'll show and format a visualization of the name, location, and give you like a mobile app that you can actually give to your team or whatever your use case is to actually have a mobile app with that type of information in place. So there's different use cases for it, whether it's like a personal CRM or some sort of like order delivery system. And since everyone kind of knows how to use Google Sheets and everyone has access to it, now it's accessible and something that people can modify without, you know, needing to create a database or knowing SQL or whatnot.
Yeah, and the app just powerful.
That's really cool.
Yeah, it's really
exactly.
Cool. Sounds like an Airtable acquisition, if nothing else.
Possibly.
Although hopefully
possibly.
More.
Yeah, possibly. I mean, one use case actually that was kind of interesting that they shared was there's this woman that made an app for their like kids soccer team with like a roster of their players.
Hmm.
And, you know, I don't know what like the big business opportunity is that particular use case, but it's a really cool creative application.
Yeah.
Where this woman probably wouldn't have ever, well, certainly wouldn't have ever like hired an engineering team and said, we're going to create an app for our team, you know, but she found this tool and, you know, within 5-10 minutes, she created this app.
That's really cool.
What's next for you? What's next for FYI? Like, what are you working on? Just continuing to iterate? Do you have another big product launch coming out? What do you think?
Yeah. So we've been focused a lot on helping individuals find their documents. Individuals who are using documents personally or who are on teams. And our big push now is actually to get entire teams using FYI. And we need to make sure, like Heaton said, it's a product that spreads on its own. So we're just working on building out some really, really cool features called FYI for teams.
Yeah, people have their team members, they share the product with their team members for individual use cases around like, hey, I'm more productive, let's say, or like, it's more efficient for me to find documents. So we've been doing what we do, which is lots of research and digging into like, what are people doing with documents between each other inside of a company? We did a bunch of that early on, but now like we have USAID, so it's a little bit different because like people speak differently once they're using your product and you can talk to them about it. And so we've been learning a lot about what that's going to take. One thing that, you know, really surprised us is that the amount of documents people have and the amount of scale that we've had to hit even early on in the life of the company. And so we're spending a lot of time making sure that when we bring on new people from a team after someone's already excited about it, that the experience is really great. And that's been a lot of fun to figure out, considering we also have this thing, and it's funny, like we talk to people about what we're doing and they're like, so you're integrating all these tools? Yeah. So you're integrating into their APIs? Yeah. And you're pulling in all the historical information somebody has so they can see it in your tool. Yeah. Oh, okay. Well, is there a way you could do your business without doing that? I'm like, why? Well, it's challenging. These APIs change all the time and there's all this data. I'm like, yeah, well, no pain, no gain, right? So like we discover that this problem is worth solving. So I think the big thing for us is how do we make teams' lives easier and help work and people working together? I mean, obviously it's a product we all use on our team. We're seeing the benefit of it, but what we're really looking to figure out is like, how do we make sure that, you know, whole teams, whole companies use the product? That's what's exciting for us.
And part of that too is adding more integration. So there's things that we absolutely have to have that we don't have just yet, and we will soon. So Quip, Confluence, Airtable, I mentioned.
Evernote
is a big one.
Everyone actually wants Evernote.
Yeah, it's the number one most requested integration. So there's a lot of integrations. And then, of course, updating the old integrations as they change that we need to maintain and add.
That sounds challenging. But on the good side, you know.
That's when, it?
Yeah.
You don't have any other advice for us?
No advice. Well, what I'm going to say is a positive thing. So sometimes no pain, no gain is what you said earlier. And in some ways, it creates more defensibility. So if tomorrow you're a rocket ship and somebody else is like, oh, we need to copy them. We need to compete with them. Now they have all this work to do. And so it's slower. So there's always some there's some positives when it comes to the pain that gets that comes with getting started and building something that's like really useful.
Yeah, I think also research on top of that helps with defensibility. Heaton was just saying we did some additional research on top of the old research we did. I think we've done like 150 or more interviews at this point with customers. Yeah, and most of those, well, let's say half of those Heaton and I did on our own, and then we have PMs helping us. But yeah, we've done a ton. We've done how many user tests? I don't even know. Anymore. 50? I mean, 50, something crazy.
Yeah.
We've done a lot of user tests because the key is just knowing more than anyone else about the customer and the industry. We do a ton of research on the industry. I think there's a 200-page deck floating around somewhere.
I think it's 300 now.
300, just about like the industry landscape, not like competitors alone, just the industry landscape of the document industry.
Wow. So where can they find you? Where can they follow you? You're on Twitter, I know.
Oh, I'm embarrassed about my Twitter name. It's so long. It's just my name. It's Marie
Prokopetz. Would you like me to spell it for you?
Yeah, please.
It's Marie Prokopetz. So it's Marie, M-A-R-I-E, P-R-O-K-E.
No.
Oh, see, I already got it wrong.
Wow.
Oh, no.
See, you're going to have to spell it.
Oh, my God.
Just Google search her.
You can Google search me. It's Marie Prokopetz. Wow. At least
you got your full name. I don't have my full name.
Yeah. Is that good? Really? Yeah, okay.
I like how he looks at the bright side. It's good.
You ruined it because Heaton one day was like, oh, it's too long to fit in a tweet. It takes up the characters. Mm-hmm. And ever since then.
It does take up a bunch of characters. See? I've gotten used to it though.
So that's where you can follow me. Heaton's HN Shaw, right? On Twitter.
HNSHAH. Yeah.
We're also usefyi.com. You can find us there.
Yep.
Anything else?
Yeah. We're sharing a lot on Twitter on the FYI account.
My dog's on Twitter too.
Yeah.
Ralph.
What's your dog's handle?
Ralph is a beast.
That's it?
Ralph is a beast.
Ralph is a beast. All right.
Nice. Ralph is a beast.
Off to follow Ralph.
Nice. Oh, yeah. Please follow Ralph.
We almost brought Ralph today.
That would be nice.
Oh, he's too crazy.
Cool. Well, thanks for coming on. Next time, bring Ralph.
Yeah.
Okay, we will.
And bring me some tea, too. That looks good.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah,
absolutely.
We should do that.
All right. Thanks for coming.
Bye.
Thanks, Ryan.
Thanks for tuning in. We'll be back next week. But in the meantime, share the podcast with your friends on Twitter and tag a guest you'd like to hear in a future episode. See you soon.